It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from overcast Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 45 degrees. Rain is likely before 1 p.m., turning to showers after 1. Cloudy skies today, high near 47. Scattered showers tonight with low around 39. Northwest winds to 20 will turn to the west and come down to 5, and then finally to the southeast tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak City Council gets a visit from Major General Randy Church Key. He's going to talk to us about the Arctic. The Senate has had a hard time even convening during its fourth special session. And we get reactions from the public to the mask mandate that went into effect in Anchorage on Thursday. Those stories, plus University of Alaska president reacts to a request for a vaccine requirement at UAF.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. President Biden is holding talks with both factions of the Democratic Party today at the White House. NPR's Mara Liasson reports he needs a compromise to pass the two biggest pieces of his legislative agenda.
Earlier today, President Biden met with Senators Joe Manchin and with Kyrsten Sinema, the two moderates who've been holding up his Build Back Better plan. That's the giant package of investments in child care, elder care, public preschool, and climate. A compromise on climate is still elusive. Senator Manchin says he won't vote for a plan that would penalize utilities that contribute to global warming. And Manchin says he doesn't like the idea of a carbon tax either. The president's $3.5 trillion wish list has been shrinking as the two wings of his party figure out what they can pass with no votes from Republicans. Their margins in Congress are so small they can afford to lose only a few House Democrats and not a single one in the Senate. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
FBI agents have executed a search warrant at a Washington, D.C. home reportedly owned by a prominent Russian oligarch with ties to the Kremlin. The Treasury sanctioned Oleg Deripaska in 2018, saying he acts as an agent of the Russian government. He's also been linked to former President Trump's one-time campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin was in Ukraine today. From Moscow, NPR's Charles Maines reports, Austin is reaffirming U.S. support in the face of Russian aggression and expansionism.
In talks with President Volodymyr Zelensky and other top officials, Austin expressed the U.S.'s unwavering support for Ukraine, with Russia clearly very much on his mind. The defense secretary called on the Kremlin to end its occupation of the Crimean Peninsula and blamed Moscow for the lack of a peace settlement in the still-simmering conflict in East Ukraine. He also vowed the U.S. would do everything it could to support Ukraine's capability to defend itself from Russian aggression. Underscoring the U.S. commitment, Austin's visit coincided with the delivery of a fresh shipment of arms to Ukraine, part of a $60 million aid package approved by the Biden administration this summer. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
It's the second day of jury selection in the Georgia trial of three men charged in last year's killing of Ahmaud Arbery. And many prospective jurors so far have been let go because they've already formed an opinion based on publicity around the case. Arbery, a 25-year-old black man out for a jog, can be seen on video being chased down by a pickup truck before he was shot dead. The FDA is expected this week to authorize boosters for the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines, dramatically expanding availability. They could also recommend letting people mix and match their shots. Then the FDA turns to children. Its advisory committee meets Tuesday to consider shots for those ages 5 to 11. This, as a new poll shows, parents' concerns about vaccinating their kids are increasing. It's NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
In an effort to help secure the United States' position in the Arctic, The Department of Defense founded a new regional center in June, the Ted Stevens Center for Arctic Security Studies. It's the first regional center to be founded since the year 2000. The regional centers are meant to educate and network local civilian and military leaders and teach topics on defense issues relevant to their locale. The Ted Stevens Center doesn't have a formal headquarters yet, but does have its first employee. Retired Air Force Major General Randy Church Key was selected in late April as the first senior advisor for the center. He's charged with laying the foundation for the center, and he's off to a running start. Key recently accepted an invitation to discuss security in the Arctic with the Kodiak City Council over Zoom last Tuesday during their work session.
Then the question that strategically should be posed is, what can be done locally to advance the national interest and create a situation where Kodiak, as an area within the gateway to the Arctic region, can help offer ideas and solutions and better shape the region?
It's no secret that the Arctic is an area of increasing strategic interest for the United States and its competitors. The recent presence of Chinese warships in the Alaska Exclusive Economic Zone last August is a testament to that. Key didn't reference any plans to expand the military presence on Kodiak, but he did discuss an issue of great import to the Coast Guard, building infrastructure to support a new generation of heavy icebreakers. The Coast Guard plans to build new icebreakers to replace the aging Polar Star, and it's anyone's guess where they will be home-ported. Coast Guard Base Kodiak is likely on the list of possibilities. Kodiak City Council members had the opportunity to ask questions of Key. Rich Walker asked him about the Russian military vessels that disrupted Alaskan fishing operations in August of 2020, ordering U.S. fishing boats out of the area. Key made it clear that he felt that never should have happened.
What can we learn from that? And then what investment decisions do you need to make to help prevent it from happening again? To me, those are important decisions to make. What the role the Stevens Center can do is really trying to help provide, as Senator Sullivan has asked for, as an example, is studies and analysis that help validate or refute what sort of policy choices need to be made in Washington for investments in wars.
The relevance of the Ted Stevens Center can only increase as climate change opens up natural resources and shipping routes in the Arctic. The fourth special session is half over, and while some House committees have met, none have in the Senate. Senators are split over Governor Mike Dunleavy's plans to change the dividend and how to pay for it. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has this report.
Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes is frustrated the Senate isn't meeting. She wants to start passing major bills now because she says it will be tough to do next year.
If we can get one or two moving, perhaps in January, the momentum would be there to continue. But I think it's going to be incredibly difficult in an election year.
Hughes says the amount of taxes needed to pay for the budget isn't clear. For example, in December, the state will update its forecast for how much oil revenue it expects in the future.
To do our proper job, we have to look at the revenue forecast and we have to look at the growth of the permanent fund and how much larger that draw would be.
Hughes supports drawing an additional $1 billion this year and next year to balance the budget. It's balanced now, but at a much lower dividend level than that proposed by Dunleavy and supported by Hughes. Not all senators agree with Hughes's approach. There are two other groups of lawmakers in the legislature with their own ideas about how to balance the budget and fix the PFD. Another group of Republicans is also skeptical of substantial amounts of new taxes, but they point to current revenue forecasts that say the budget wouldn't balance with higher dividends and no major new taxes. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman is in this group. He wants to protect $30 billion in permanent fund earnings that aren't currently protected in the Constitution. But he isn't eager to put the PFD in the Constitution, at least for now.
In my opinion, we should rewrite the formula and run it for a couple of years, see how it works. And if it looks like it's a stable concept that'll last for, you know, several decades, like the last formula, then we can talk about doing something like that at that time. but it's far too early to do that.
Stedman says the Finance Committee that he co-chairs will consider bills that would set the dividend formula at different levels, but he says that can happen during the next regular session in January. The third group of legislators, mostly Democrats, is more open to introducing new taxes as part of a package that would pay for larger dividends. Anchorage Democrat Tom Begich has reintroduced tax proposals that were considered by the legislature in the past, like increasing oil taxes. He acknowledges that larger taxes aren't popular, but says they're needed to reach an agreement.
That is what I'm kind of looking for from my colleagues, the willingness for them to see the bigger picture.
The taxes that Begich proposed would be enough to allow for the state to pay for dividends at an amount that's higher than in recent years, but lower than what Dunleavy has proposed. To pay for Dunleavy's proposed amount, Begich says a statewide tax like a sales tax would be needed. But he says the tax could be repealed if oil and permanent fund revenue grew enough. However, he says counting on higher oil prices would be irresponsible. He says a working group of legislators laid out how much money the state would need, as well as other assumptions like how much revenue the state would bring in. And he says it would be hard to reach a compromise if lawmakers stray from those assumptions.
It doesn't matter what the price of oil is today, because you have to base it on an agreed-upon consensus on those assumptions.
Senate President Peter Michicki is trying to sort out how to get the three groups to agree on a set of major policy changes, or at least the 11 senators needed to pass bills. He says from this point forward, each body should pass its own version of major changes and then work out compromises.
It's tough enough with 20 senators. It's nearly impossible with 60 legislators. So if you have the two statements or the two positions of a bill that passes, I think that's something much easier to work.
The Senate has only had enough members to hold a regular floor session once in the fourth special session. That happened on its first day. That would be needed again to pass Michicki's proposal for a formal new committee that has the power to pass bills. But a group of senators also could meet to work on a compromise that it would recommend to the others. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
University of Alaska Interim President Pat Pitney has turned down a request from University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor Dan White to implement a COVID-19 vaccine requirement at UAF. During a press call on the decision on Monday, Pitney pointed to practical, legal, and health requirements that weighed in on the decision.
The practical application of going with a broad mandate at only one of the universities when we're a single employer was both from a practical standpoint and a legal standpoint a little bit different, and from a health standpoint was really not differentiable.
Pitney said an existing system-wide mask mandate and targeted vaccination requirements for some groups at individual campuses are proving effective. She also said she expects a federal COVID vaccine mandate to apply to the entire UA system.
The federal OSHA mandate we're anticipating sooner than later, with an expectation of implementation on January 1.
Pitney says the OSHA mandate will apply to the university because it has federal contracts. She noted that all campuses could also be subject to a potential U.S. Department of Education COVID vaccination requirement. Pitney added that she supports vaccination regardless of mandates.
I encourage that from a health perspective as much as from a, I believe it's coming.
Earlier this month, UAF Chancellor Dan White had asked Pitney to approve a vaccination mandate covering all UAF Fairbanks employees and in-person students with a January 1st start date. During his own online media availability on Monday, Chancellor White said the broad vaccination mandate was sought by UAF faculty, staff, and student organizations. White noted earlier approved UAF vaccination requirements for residential students, intercollegiate athletes, and some classes remain in place.
We have scuba diving classes, for example, that require that you share a respirator and those kinds of situations we've already approved. It's my expectation that over the last 2 weeks, there's been a number of other requests that have been kind of waiting for President Pinney's response. So I do expect to get more vaccine requirement requests, and we'll look at those on a case-by-case basis.
White said about half of UAF faculty have voluntarily attested to being vaccinated against COVID, with lesser percentages for staff and students. As of Monday, UAF listed being aware of 446 positive COVID cases among students, employees, and contractors at all locations since March 2020. After days of heated public testimony, a mask mandate went into effect in Anchorage for most indoor areas on Thursday. The ordinance has numerous exemptions written into it and no clear penalties, which has led some to question whether it will help reduce the spread of COVID. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports on how that question is playing out at small businesses across the city.
Samantha Barr, co-owner of Granny's Guns in Southeast Anchorage, is no fan of masks.
I have asthma. I wear mine if I go into a store that requires it, but in general, I don't care for them.
She doubts they work, and she says gun stores are especially susceptible to would-be thieves, so people walking in with masks make her nervous. She says she'll let people coming in wear masks anyway, and she'll even consider wearing one if a customer asks her to.
I will probably just do it on a case-by-case basis. Like I said, I don't expect this administration to enforce this.
Barr's attitude reflects that of some businesses in Anchorage that oppose mask requirements. Instead of actively enforcing the mandate, some have opted to post the text of the ordinance in their windows. On social media, some customers say they're sticking with businesses that don't enforce the mandate. Ordinance supporters say they expected that, and they point to what they see as a silent majority of businesses that are making changes, like at Fat Boy Vapors, an electronic cigarette shop. Owner Matt Wagner.
I'd say there is an increase in folks wearing masks, and I'd also say that there's certainly some upset individuals.
Compliance isn't perfect, and online social media posts suggest that many are taking advantage of exemptions for people with disabilities. T-shirts that say the wearer is part of Dave Bronson's administration, which is also exempted under the ordinance, are available online. But Midtown Assemblymember Meg Zalatel, who sponsored the ordinance, says that's okay.
What we've heard from public health experts is we don't need perfect compliance. What we need is pretty much majority compliance. And in addition to other mitigation measures, this is really the lowest hanging fruit.
She says that under a previous mask mandate that went into effect last year, compliance went up by about 20%, even with similar exemptions and without clear enforcement mechanisms. Some businesses are happy about the change.
Hello.
Hi there.
At the Tiny Gallery, an art shop in downtown Anchorage that relies largely on tourist spending, owner Lorette Rose says she's hopeful the mandate will reduce COVID spread.
If you look around downtown, there's not a lot of foot traffic. There's not people walking around, and that's not because of the mask mandate. That's because of case counts being high and people working from home. That's worse for downtown businesses than any mask mandate could possibly be.
The idea that mask mandates will help business is borne out by academic research, says Nolan Clauda, who directs the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. He cites a University of Washington study.
The communities that had a rule requiring masks in most public places had 5% more consumer spending than those that didn't have it.
Surgical masks, when worn properly, can reduce COVID spread by about 10%, according to a recent large-scale study. But Clauda says the more important piece is the perception that they work.
A fear of infection is the biggest thing that keeps people away from local spending. So if you're easing that fear, then anything that does that is likely to increase a little bit, you know, people spending locally.
Mandate supporters on the assembly hope the carrot of economic recovery will help convince more people to mask up. They also hope the Bronson administration will use the stick of enforcement, something it so far hasn't shown it's willing to do. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
Kodiak's Aleutic Museum received a grant from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Fund Trustee Council on Wednesday, and it's a whopper. $8 million will go toward renovating the museum. April Lactonen, counselor, executive director for the Aleutic Museum, says it will change the floor plan and the scope of the facility.
Our gallery, the public part of our museum where visitors walk through and look at exhibits,
The only critique that we ever hear is, where's the rest of the museum? You know, is it just these two rooms? And we're always saying, well, yeah, you know, but we've packed a lot of information into here. And so please, you know, walk through and let us know what you think. So that was one area that we definitely wanted to expand.
While the oil spill might not immediately seem related to the Aleutic Museum, there's a closer tie than one might think. While the ecological devastation was horrifying, Counselor says that the cultural impact of the cleanup effort was also extreme.
During the cleanup, there was a documentation of site disturbances by people who were working on the spill. There were some archaeological sites that were looted or damaged by people who were accessing remote parts of the archipelago that were not normally seeing human activity. Because of that, in 1993, the Kodiak Area Native Association secured a grant from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council to build the original first floor of our facility, which has primarily been our headquarters ever since then.
Before they could get the grant to renovate the museum, there was one small hurdle. They didn't actually own the building. According to Counselor, Koniag Incorporated recently purchased half the building from Natives of Kodiak and is in the process of donating it to the Aleutic Heritage Foundation, which is the governing board of the museum. The first floor of the building is set to be donated soon by CANA, which would see the museum owning the entire facility.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Salmon permit values tick up in several regions. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Good catches in most Alaska regions and higher dock prices have fueled a sense of optimism among Alaska salmon fishermen. That's reflected in permit prices that have ticked upwards, but the market is tight, say brokers. Drift permits at Bristol Bay, for example, have topped $200,000.
The highest has been 210, but it's a pretty tight market.
Maddie Lightsey is a broker at Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer.
A lot of fishermen had a great year out there. They made a lot of money. But even so, buyers are hesitant to pay these really high prices. Many are hoping it's a pretty short spike.
At Cook Inlet, a better season than expected pushed up drift permit values that had tanked to the mid-teens.
Not everyone, of course, but a lot of folks broke six figures. They had the best season that they've had in years. And permits hit 30,000 in August.
Kodiak seine permits have been on a steady rise from the mid-$30,000 range up to $40,000. It's slow going for permit action at Prince William Sound and Southeast, although Power Troll permits are making a comeback, as are drift permits at Area M on the Alaska Peninsula. Overall, Lightsey says fishermen voice concerns about climate change and salmon taken as bycatch, but it's not enough to deter them from buying permits.
In general, there's a lot of optimism, and I think a lot of that is this new guard of fishermen that is young and energetic and hungry and incredibly driven and dedicated to sustainability and preserving the future of their industry. And I think together with the old guard, they're really making a difference. They're writing letters and networking and forming advocacy groups, and I think it's working, and all those things are coming together and instilling a sense of pride and ownership in their fishery and making them more inclined to invest in it.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com and check out the lineup at Pacific Marine Expo, November 18th through 20th in Seattle. PacificMarineExpo.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 19th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:54. It will set again at 6:53. That's going to give us 9 hours and 59 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 22. That was set in 1915 and 2016. A record high was 59, set in 1929, and it is now 46 degrees under overcast skies. The wind a mere northwest 3 miles per hour out at the airport. Not bad compared to the blustery winds we had earlier. Rain is likely this afternoon, at least before 2 p.m., then showers after that. Cloudy skies today, high near 47, so we're almost there. Scattered showers tonight, cloudy skies with a low near 39. West wind to 5, becoming southeast this evening. For tomorrow, showers are likely mainly before 5. Cloudy skies, high near 45 tomorrow. Northwest wind to 15. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 2:05 this afternoon of 9 feet here on the east side. That'll be followed by a low tide at 8:20 this evening of 1/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:36 this afternoon of 15 feet. That'll be followed by a low tide at 8:57 p.m. of minus 4/10 of a foot in Larsen Bay. Mariners, we do have a small craft advisory through Wednesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. West wind to 30 knots right now and seas to 15 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 25, seas to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory today. Northeast 20 will turn to the west and come up to 25 knots this afternoon, seas to 6 feet. For tonight, southwest 15, seas remaining at 6 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest winds to 20, seas coming down to 4 feet in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For Chiniac Bay, northwest 20, seas to 3 feet today. For tonight, variable less than 10, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 20, seas to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, northwest 20 right now, seas to 5 feet. For tonight, southwest 10, seas coming down to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest wind to 15 knots, diminishing to 10 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet in Marmot Bay tomorrow. Well, registration remains open for the Kodiak Hockey League's youth ice hockey season. It's open to girls and boys ages 5 to 18, and the season begins soon. New players are welcome and can begin through the KHL Learn to Play program. All you have to do is visit Kodiak Hockey League, that's all one word, .org for details. The next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will be at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, October 21st, that's this Thursday, via video conference. If you would like to attend the meeting, contact Mike Wall at gm@kmxt.org, and he will send you a link. The public is welcome to attend. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is having their annual membership meeting. That's happening at 6 to 7 p.m. next Tuesday, October 26th, over Zoom. Everyone in the community is invited and welcome. Just email outreach@kwrcc.org, or you can give them a call at 486-6171 if you'd like to attend. Agenda items include board elections, a bylaws amendment, annual financial report, and director and president reports. The Humane Society will have their annual meeting on Thursday, October 28th. That is a week from this Thursday, 5:30 to 7 p.m. via video conference. For more information and a link to the meeting, visit Kodiak Animal Shelter, all one word, .org. And if you visit the Aleutic Museum on Saturday, October 30th, you can pick up your very own copy of their new publication for youth about Aleutic history. The museum will distribute 50 free signed paperback copies of Iksani's Trout Hook, written by Alicia Drabeck and inspired by archaeological finds. This book follows two Aleutic youth at fish camp. Stop by the museum at 215 Mission Road between noon and 4 p.m. on Saturday, October 30th, mark your calendar, to pick up a signed copy on this special day. One book per family, please.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3000. 3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.